the criterion of truth. What is the standard of judgment? What is the standard by which any event narrated, any fact presented, any proposition presented to us is true or not? That is, whether a thing that is presented to us is real, not distorted by misconception, not distorted by misrepresentation. So that should be the criterion of truth. But before we consider what is the criterion of truth, we must know what truth is. But it is not easy to define what truth is. In fact, there is an article by HBP in the very first volume of her series of articles entitled What is Truth? In that she opens the article with this question, what is truth? And she cites an episode in the Gospel that when the Roman governor, Pilate, asked Jesus, who was brought before him at trial, what is truth? And Jesus keeps silent. He never answers. So he was wise. It cannot be answered. Especially when a crowd asks you what is truth, what can you tell the crowd? When you keep silent. So, truth, when we say truth, it has many connotations. It has a connotation of, from ordinary life perspective. And it has a certain meaning in a moral perspective. And in the conception of, in the standard of judgment of truth in the scientific modern science, it has one meaning. And again, in the philosophical context, it takes on a different meaning. We had a series of lectures in the Initial World Culture on Western philosophy. Western philosophy presented many philosophical propositions like rationalism, empiricism, and so on and so forth. So which of them are the true criterion of truth? Again, there is ontological criterion of truth. We have to consider all ontological principles. So this being the case, it is not easy to answer what is truth. And the consideration of the criterion of truth from any one of the aspects that we just now said clashes with others. So it's very difficult to say what is truth. Now, considering from the mundane, ordinary life perspective, truth is that which is directly perceived by contact of your senses with the object of your sense. I see an object, my sight, eyesight, my sense of sight contacts the thing that I see, and this conjunction of the sight and the object of sight gives me a perception of the thing seen. So there is one criterion of truth. Similarly with all other senses. This perception is called pratyaksha. Actual perception by the senses, which gives you perceptive knowledge. And this is empiric knowledge, pratyaksha. There is another way of arriving at truth, inference. Now, one example. We are sitting here. Or imagine yourself sitting in a theater and watching a movie. You don't know what's happening outside. There may be many things happening outside. You are not aware of it. You are engrossed in the play or a lecture or a cinema that you're seeing. And when the play is over, when the show is over, you go out and see the whole landscape is drenched in water. There are trees, roads, buildings, all drenched in water, dripping. So I infer it has rained. The knowledge that it has rained is not pratyaksha. The knowledge that is rained is not gained by contact of the object of the sense with the things perceived, things sensed. without pratyaksha. It is anumana. There is inference. That inference, can that inference be wrong? Because we know by long experience that when a large area is become, when large area become wet and drenched in water, it invariably means it has rained. So our inference that it has rained is correct cognition. So correct cognition is one criterion of truth from the mundane perspective. The other is the deposition of trustworthy witnesses, not untrustworthy witnesses, but trustworthy witnesses. Now, many truths are said to us. Now, all the great people whose integrity you can never doubt, like Plato, like Aristotle, like some of the great sages of India, they have spoken some truth. So you place a reliance upon them. Because if you do comparative study of all their utterings, they all speak of one truth, one or the other verity. Though they are far apart in time and in space. So, and they are very reliable people. So you place certain value to their utterance. This is one of the criteria of truth. That is trustworthy witnesses, deposition of trustworthy witnesses. So this is one criteria of truth. Now the other criteria of truth is moral criterion. When a person says something, you know, whether it is true or not, we always doubt, the truth of a statement made by anyone. But if we know for certain that the person is sincere and honest. What is sincerity and honesty? It is the conformity of your actions and your speech and your conduct with what you think, the ideals that you hold. There is perfect harmony between word and act. So you will never find any disharmony in the word and act and the ideal, the word and the act. In the life of a person, you call him a sincere person. You are the honest person. So his statement always you place value. And it is of the nature of truth. Though it is not the truth, it is the nature of truth. So this is one criterion, another criterion. And coming to the criterion of truth on which science relies is objective observation. There is all the phenomena of nature are to be observed without your bias, without your preconceived notions, beliefs, expectations, and so on and so forth. Objective perception, objective observation. You make observation of number of facts of nature and then hypothesize this must be the general principles on which accounts for the many observed facts. Then you put that hypothesis to test by further observations, by experimental verification, and logical, mathematical logic, reasoning by mathematical logic. If the hypothesis stands all these tests, then you say, yes, this is a hypothesis that attains the status of a theory, and that theory which is not disproved by further observations and other verifications and experimentation, you consider as truth. So this is the scientific criterion of truth. But the problem is this. Now in science, modern science, we have many disciplines, many branches. You have physics, you have chemistry, you have physiology, you have anatomy, and you have genetical science, you have cosmology. So many different branches of science there. Now each branch of the science is valid in its findings, in its statement of facts pertaining to nature from that perspective. Any proposition, any statement of physics, you, for example, take Newton's laws of motion, is a branch of physics. So it can be demonstrated even by mathematical logic. You know, we have seen the laws of motion put in a mathematical logic. So, and it has been observed, it answers your phenomena of, you know, why an apple falls, how the planets or planets move about in the space in a regular order. They say that Newton's laws of motion answers these mysteries, so it becomes a law. It considers the truth. But Newton's laws of motion doesn't hold good at all in quantum mechanics. It totally breaks down. And what has that to do with your chemical truths, many of the truths in chemistry that you uncover? Laws of motion has no meaning there at all. So similarly, each science, each branch of science is valid in its own realm. But when it is considered from other perspective, it has no validity at all, though relatively true. So what this means is that science can at best give this relative truth. Science at best can give us relative to the particular proposition, assumption, observation in that particular branch of science. So in other branch of science, it does not become valid. And yet, so much of advances have been made, and the discoveries have been, the laws have been discovered have been put into, put into technological developments, and we have built a wondrous civilization, mechanistic, electromagnetic laws have been harnessed. And build this mechanized and digital civilization of, you know, wonderful it is. And yet, science cannot answer all the questions of life. What is gravity itself? Nobody knows. What is gravity itself? Nobody can answer what gravity itself is. Ask any scientist, honest scientist, I do not know. And then what life itself? There are theories about life. Nobody knows. What is mind? What is consciousness? They don't know. So that's why it is relative truth. Science can give us only relative truth. Now, laws of gravity does not have any application in cognitive psychology. So it is all disconnected, you know, different branches. But there is nothing, you know, principle connecting them all, give us a view of the whole of life, whole of nature. Answers all questions. It is missing. And science is in search of it. Science is in search of one universal principle, unifying universal principle, which can be represented in such terms and such axioms that the whole of the phenomena of life, psychological, cosmological, everything, falls in perfect, coherent, unified system of thought. And all stands explained as so many aspects of one universal truth which combines them all, links them all. It is in search of it, and they admit that they have not yet obtained, they have not been able to evolve such a theory of everything, as I say. It is only speculation. They are not able to obtain it. Now take the case of religions. Every religion invariably claims that it is based on a revelation. Revelation by supernatural beings have revealed that religion. They say there is a criteria of truth. So was revealed by supernatural agency, maybe God or whatever you may call it, it's true. But if there is so, then every religion must give complete answer to every problem of life, every mystery of life. But we know that they do not. Now, every religion is split into so many sects. Each sect, you know, divided into so many subsects, and each claims to be possessor of truth, and they are mutually clashing, and their mutual animosity and mutual distrust and hatred, then how can they be? How can they be possessor of truth? So obvious, they did not possess truth. And again, take that, it's not that all religions do not speak truth at all. They speak relative truth, like science. Take any of the ancient scriptures. Take Plato's philosophy, or take Upanishads, or take the Bhagavad Gita, or Dhammapada. No one can say that what they expound is not true. They all speak of one or the other aspect of a verity which is undeniable. Because again, applying the criteria of the trustworthy witnesses as one of the criteria of truth, you'll find the same truth spoken of by all very trustworthy, very great, eminent people in the past. So it must be true, inference. And yet, many problems of life are not answered. They leave out many things. They leave out, if the question is asked, how did man come into being? There are some theories in science, and there are partial expositions in the Sankhya philosophy. But how do you reconcile with Darwinian evolution based on? Why Darwinian evolution doesn't account for the principle of mind and consciousness and self-consciousness and the higher capacity of brain, the wide gulf between man and animal? How? It cannot explain. So, though religions, in their philosophical expositions, give us some echoes of eternal verities, yet religions, as we find it today, in their formal representation, they do not give us the whole truth. All the mysteries of life can be comprehended in one all-inclusive knowledge and wisdom is still missing. So then, what we have is fragment of eternal verities. So what then is the criteria of truth? Now, in ISIS Unveiled, HBP gives an excellent clue to what is absolute truth. If science is in search of one universal unifying principle which can be represented in a system of thought with such terms and explanations and axioms, and the whole of it can be comprehended in one theoretical model, how is it to be obtained? And only that can be true. Only that can be truth. And that can only be absolute truth. Absolute truth is not relative. It is at all times true. Comprehending the whole gamut of natural phenomena, not leaving out anything, as different aspects of one coherent, unifying whole, that's absolute truth. Now, how do we come to that? Now, look what she says. Among thousands of exoteric or popular conflicting religions which have been propagated since the days when the first men were enabled to interchange their ideas, not a nation, not a people, not the most abject tribe, but after their own fashion, has believed in an unseen God, the first cause of unerring immutable laws, and in the immortality of our own spirit, No creed, no false philosophy, no religious exaggerations could ever destroy the feeling in us. Now, what is this telling us? It is telling us that your absolute truth can only be found in that innate, indestructible, deep belief in you of the first cause, you know, the cause of unerring, immutable laws and immortality of our own, our spirit. So it is in immortality, imperishable nature, divine nature of ours. In that and through that alone it can get absolute. This is the beautiful clue that HBP gives. Now, it is very difficult for people trained in modern science to accept this, but there is no other way. Now, there are divine timelines, there are hermetic philosophy. Some statements are made which will give us a glimpse of what absolute truth is. So, if absolute truth can only be obtained through our divine nature, development of the divine nature, which is one with the universal spirit, and there you perceive totality. But it can never be understood in terms of your analytical lower mental processes. It can be perceived only in your spirit. But when you try to bring it back here, it gets fragmented. So this is what divine commander says. Absolute truth can never be reflected on earth. All that you can obtain on earth by your various methods is only relative truth, and they cannot be true. There is nothing true in the physical world. This proposition, these are, don't reject them, but you must deeply think over it, because these are statements from highest to the greatest minds. Now, he says, truth alone, says Pamander, is eternal and immutable. Truth is the first of blessings, but truth is not and cannot be on earth. It is possible that God sometimes gifts a few men together with the faculty of comprehending divine things, with that of rightly understanding truth. That which has drawn its essence from man is not the truth. And for only that which has drawn its essence from itself, self-existing, self-propitiating, self-reflecting essence, consciousness, only that is truth. That which has drawn its essence from itself, remains itself, unchangeable, is true. How can that which changes so as not to finally be recognized be ever true? These are all very important propositions. Truth then is that only which is immaterial, not enclosed within a corporeal envelope, that which is colorless, formless, exempt from change and alteration, and that which is eternal. All that which perishes is a lie. Earth is but a dissolution and a generation, constantly changing. Every generation proceeds from a dissolution. The things of earth are but appearances and imitations of truth. They are what the picture is to reality. The things of earth are not the truth. This is a statement. So then, having given the clue that truth in its entirety, absoluteness, can only be known, perceived by your highest divine nature, which has to be developed. Having said this, then the question arises, then how do we attain truth? How do we attain truth? Teacher says there are two ways of attaining truth. One is on the plane of spirit. Second, on the plane of matter, relatively. You can attain truth, you cannot attain absolute on the plane of material plane. You can attain to relatively absolute truth on the material plane. How? We'll examine this. How do we how do we attain truth on the spiritual plane? But that's very difficult. Not everyone can do it. Now, on the plane of spirituality, to reach the Son of Truth, teacher says, we must work in dead earnest for the development of our higher nature. We know that by paralyzing gradually within ourselves the appetites of the lower personality and thereby deadening the voice of purely physiological mind, that mind which depends upon and is inseparable from its medium or vehicle, the organic brain, the animal man in us may make room for the spiritual. And once aroused from its latent state, the highest spiritual senses and perception grow in us in proportion and develop pari passu with the divine man. But how many can do it? This is what the great adepts, the yogis in the East, the mystics in the West have always done and are still doing, but it is not possible. For the ordinary man to achieve this, teacher says, is like trying to reach the moon on a bicycle. So what then is the alternative? She says, then try to obtain the same thing relatively on earth, but comparative study of all the great traditions of the great sages of the past and the present, after separating the many misconceptions and falsities that have accumulated over time, and separating grain from the chaff, and infer from that the universal principle. You have the truth, relatively, on earth, and shows the way how we can obtain absolute truth. But the thing is, even a man who has attained to absolute truth, he can but give us only relative truth. So to obtain truth on the spiritual plane, we have to develop in us the inner knowledge, the spiritual knowledge. That's why ancients always showed how you can obtain to absolute truth. That is, you have to know yourself. Man must know himself. That is, acquire inner perception which never deceive. Our sense perception is full of deception. Our intellect is full of limitation and deception. But your inner divine faculty of apprehending truth directly, after, with the power of will, you have neutralized the free action of senses in the mind, then you can perceive truth directly. Before he can master any absolute truth, this has to be accomplished. So, but even to approach related truth, it requires the love of truth. How many of us are prepared to accept even related truth if it's going to hurt our personality? So, when such is the selfishness, how can you attain absolute truth? And what you always made very clear by all the great teachers is that such a all-comprehending, inclusive philosophy of truth as can be comprehended by human being has always existed on earth is given. That's what Krishna says in the 4th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. He formally taught exhaustless doctrine of yoga. He formally taught it in the Vaivashvat and passed on from generation to generation, studied by great rishis, mighty art was lost, again I revive it. So they keep reviving it. So this ancient wisdom science, which has been tested and verified by generations of highest developed adepts, Mahatmas, who have developed their spiritual, physical, spiritual, psychic, intellectual and physical organization to the highest perfection and have achieved self-mastery. They have given a whole philosophy of all-inclusive knowledge in wisdom that must be studied. And after having given that, they show how we can verify and make it, you know, your own, part of your own personal experience and evolve and know the absolute truth yourself, within yourself, by yourself. So that's the approach. So this complete system of philosophy does exist. And after studying that, that's what HPP says, relatively we can obtain absolute truth in this way. In the light of theosophy, study all the systems of ancient religious philosophies, which all speak of many aspects of truth, and compare with modern science, and you know, reconcile and see for yourself that true science and true religion are two aspects of one and the same. Truth and reality, they are not mutually conflicting. So this explains the complete mystery of life. Now, let's see. If we consider only science, if we consider only any one of the religions, though they all speak of some or the other truth, the whole of explanation cannot be found in them. We cannot find in them. Look, but the ancient wisdom science, which has been re-promulgated by the great adepts as theosophy, which gives us complete picture of what man and the universe are, their common origin, how they are correlated, how they are integrated, and their origin, their evolution, and the present state of development, and their ultimate destiny, and the whole evolutionary history of both universe and man, recorded knowledge, verified knowledge, as much as of it is possible for the present day generation in its state of development can absorb, has been given. If you study this, what cannot be explained, these mysteries which I am going to read now, you will find explanation there. So then, that must be the criterion of truth. Now, look at this. What is the object, what is the use and the inhabitation of other planets? Are they inhabited? We don't know, they're only speculation. And which planets serve to complete and prolong the evolutionary course and to fill the required measure, the universal experience of souls? So theosophy says that every planet is a scene of evolution of souls, as much as this. Then where do we see them? For an explanation. Now, second, how do you account for geological cataclysms of the earth? The frequent absence of intermediate types of its fauna. Many species of animals and plants existed at one time have disappeared now. Now many species are disappearing now, and many others will come into future. How do you account for that? Is it accident? Now, the appearance of architectural other relics, races now lost, other races, like, you know, in the South America, brilliant civilization, now only remnants of it are left. What about them? Where did they arise from? And you get wondrous architectural features like pyramids, which is the most mysterious. And if you study them, they have profound astronomical, geometrical and astrological knowledge. Where all this? Who produced them? Nobody knows. Can our science explain? Our present-day religion explain? They cannot explain. So all that we have is only vain conjecture. The nature of extinct civilizations, the causes of their extinction, the persistence of savagery, and the unequal development of existing civilizations, the differences, physical and internal, between the various races of men, their line of future development. Nothing is known. So the contrasts and the unison of world fates, the common foundation underlying them all, where to find it? And the fourth, the existence of evil, of suffering, of sorrow, a hopeless puzzle to the mere philanthropist and theologian. Inequalities in social conditions, privilege, sharp contrast between wealth and poverty, intelligence and stupidity, culture and ignorance, virtue and wildness, appearance of men of genius in families destitute of it, as well as other facts in conflict with the law of heredity, the frequent cases of unfitness of environment around individuals, so sore as to embitter disposition, hamper aspiration, paralyze endeavor. The violent antithesis between character and condition, the occurrence of accidents, misfortune, untimely death, all of them probably solvable only by either conventional theory of divine caprice or chance. So how do you account for that? The possession by individuals of psychic powers and clairvoyance, clairaudience, and wonderful powers and knowledge. The true nature of genuine phenomena in spiritualism and so on and so forth. How do you account for that? Nothing is known. If a system of knowledge, a synthesis of science, religion, philosophy can offer explanation to that, is that not the criterion of truth? That's what the great master says. The great master, master of masters. When Theosophical movement was launched, this is what he says. The true religion and philosophy offer the solution of every problem. That is the basic of truth. And the Maha Chauhan says that the world in such a bad condition morally is a conclusive evidence that none of its religions and philosophies, those of the civilized races less than any other, has ever possessed the truth. The right and logical explanation of the subject of the problems of the great dual principles, dvandva, of right and wrong, good and evil, liberty and despotism, pain and pleasure, egotism and altruism, all as impossible to them now as they were 1,886 years ago. They are as far from the solution as they were. But to these problems, there must be somewhere a consistent solution. And if our doctrines will show the competence to offer it, then the world will be the first to confess that there must be the true philosophy, the true religion, the true life, which gives us truth and nothing but the truth. And that is the criterion of truth. Thank you.